The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It ain't the left side or the right side, and it must be the fin side. It ain't the left side or the right side.
Thank you, Solo D. Welcome to another episode of On the Fin Side here with Kat and Paul. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Spreaker, iTunes, YouTube, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. I'm Brian Kat, NFL on Twitter, and Paul is Fanatic_pick. That's Fanatic with a PH. So the NFL draft is over, wrapped up a few days ago. Be sure to check out our player-by-player breakdown. We appreciate all the feedback on there. And, Paul, it was quite a 3 days for the Dolphins. We've talked through all that. You know, we've had a couple of days to sleep on this now. Has anything changed in your mind for the better or the worse for the Dolphins 2020 draft class?
Not a bit. I really love what Flores and Greer have done here. And it's, you know, I like seeing the fact that we hit on a few things. One example I'll use is, you know, we're talking about Robert Hunt and the fact that we were talking about viewing him as being in line to be that starting bookend tackle. And sure enough, the Dolphins released their little pictures of, here's our draft picks, everybody. And there's the little T right there in the bottom right corner with his position of tackle. So, I mean, seeing things like that, you know, I love the fact that these guys are set up to be good this year, but the Dolphins drafted for leadership, athleticism, and upside. So they're good players now, but they're ones that have a tremendous ceiling. And I absolutely love that. And I see some of that reflected in their undrafted class.
Yeah, you bet. And looking at a few things, I'll go into a couple of things I'm feeling a little bit differently on. Not nothing too much, but yeah, I like that Robert Hunt looks like he's going to start out at right tackle, because let's face it, offensive tackle is more of a premier position than center or guard. And when you do that, you're going to have a lot of uncertainty at both tackle spots with Austin Jackson, with Robert Hunt, but you're also able to push those resources inside. So Jesse Davis should be moving inside to that right guard spot. And it's not a huge surprise. Robert Hunt played right tackle when he was at Louisiana, and he did a heck of a job, and he certainly has the size for it. You know, looking at the draft class in general, I've become more appreciative of how diverse the class was, because you take a chance with Tua there at five with the injury. You take a couple of risks with upside players in Austin Jackson and Noah Igbinoghene. But then also you take Robert Hunt, Raekwon Davis, and Brandon Jones, three players who can really come in and assume roles immediately and may be able to contribute there on day one.
Completely. And I think we're going to see, at a minimum, and this is going to sound weird as all hell to say, their first six draft picks, five of them can come in and contribute immediately on day one. The only one that I don't think contributes immediately on day one is Tua, who I think is going to be behind Fitzpatrick, assuming that learning role while he continues to heal up and play it a little safe with his hip, which I really want to see. And it's nothing against Tua when I say that. I want him to be 1,000% recovered before he sets foot on that field during the season.
Yeah, no, I don't think it sounds weird at all. And I think that's really the expectation at this point. I mean, if he's playing week one, I think that's a mistake. At the very least, I expect him to go on PUP, and if not, you know, really be sidelined the entire 2021 season. And if that's the case, you can look at Tua as a 2021 first round pick, and then you still have 2 ones and 2 seconds. So, you know, I don't want to say we're pushing things off, but it's definitely a team that is building here for the future. And part of the players that go into that talent pool were undrafted free agents last year from the Dolphins. I mean, they signed 18 undrafted free agents last year, and out of that class, 6 of them ended up starting at least one football game. And I mean, it's not, and part of that has to do as well with how terrible talent wise the Dolphins were on the roster, but they also did have a very good class. I mean, Preston Williams starts 7 games, was on his way to record setting receiving yards for an undrafted free agent in his rookie year before he got hurt, should be starting this year. Nick Needham starts 11 games at cornerback. He was quite a find. He should factor in as a 6th or 7th defensive back, if not a 5th defensive back this year. Shaq Calhoun started 7 games at right guard. He'll have a competition with probably Solomon Kinley for playing time and potentially a roster spot. Patrick Laird starts 4 games, was definitely a find late in the season. Jonathan Ledbetter started the first game, got a sack, then got hurt, and unfortunately he was cut the other day. Montre Hardage also made the team, started a game, and was also actually cut the other day and signed by the New York Giants. And Chris Myerick and Terrell Hanks were on the Dolphins practice squad all year, and Hanks, unfortunately, was just cut. But you get the picture here, Paul. Out of these 18 Dolphins draft picks, they did come away with, you know, looking at 4 or 5 players that should be contributing moving forward.
They should. And I'm going to actually use that to segue right into a little bit with this year's crop of undrafted free agents, which they didn't sign nearly as many. And let's face it, they have a lot less of a CFL roster as we move forward here. And one of the things I think that sets Miami apart in this process is every year you hear about these teams where, you know, the third round, you know, it's your a defensive or offensive coordinator calling the player, letting them know that they're on the team. You know, first, second round, it's the GM, the head coach, a little conference call, having some fun with the guy, you name it. You look at the regular draft, it was Greer and or Flores calling every player from start to finish. And then there's a receiver Miami signed from McHenry State as an undrafted this year. McHenry State is a college, Division II, one of the smallest colleges on the planet. It looks like a high school stadium with grainy snuff footage when you watch the film. And it's literally middle of nowhere in the Midwest. And this guy had 21 scouts of 21 different teams come to watch him play last year. And if you watch the tape, he was easily the best player on the field. Sports Illustrated actually wound up featuring him as their prospect X leading up to the draft without giving away who it was. Had teams calling him like crazy, messaging with his agent, you name it, teams upset, teams calling him, possibly trying to draft him as early as the 5th round. And you watch his tape, and Cole immediately jumps off. He's a monster gunner on special teams to the point that when they did kickoffs, they basically pushed everything to his side on kickoffs to have him be the gunner down the field. You see him level blockers, even though he's only, I think it's 5'10", 197, leveling blockers and making the tackles. And then he's returning punts, returning kicks. He's explosive with the ball in his hands. And you can't help but notice he's a guy that fits right in. And it was Flores that called the man directly to ask him to be a Miami Dolphin. Some regional scout, not some, you know, special teams assistant somewhere. Flores calling each and every prospect directly to recruit them to the team when other teams are just, you know, an executive sending a text message.
Yeah, and Matt Cole, actually, I'm very familiar with McKendree College because it's about 45 minutes away from where I am in St. Louis. And for those that don't know me, I went to Lindenwood University here in St. Charles, Missouri, and I was a national collegiate bowler, believe it or not. And McKendree was actually our biggest rival in college. So I'm very familiar with them, and I've watched Lindenwood versus McKendree football games. Haven't seen Matt Cole in person, but yeah, Paul, you gave some great information there. This is somebody who, you know, even at a small level of competition, had 43 catches for 939 yards and 12 touchdowns here last year, and 27 yards per kick return, 26 yards on average on punt return, played special teams. And the Dolphins always seem to come away with these wide receivers who are undrafted free agents. Preston Williams, you remember DeMaurier Stringfellow from a couple of years ago. They always seem to get these guys who either make the roster or almost make the roster. So yeah, he's a fascinating guy. And before the whole coronavirus thing happened here and everything was shut down, he was able to work out at Northwestern's pro day, ran a 4.48, and had a 37.5-inch vertical. As a comparison, Jerry Jeudy only had a 34.5. Not saying Cole's a better player by any means, but this is somebody who does have the speed and the athleticism too. So you combine that with the special teams ability, you know, you could be talking about somebody who is challenging, you know, Allen Hurns and Isaiah Ford, who may not be able to make as much of an impact on special teams.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned the special teams piece. He was the middle of nowhere conference. You can probably elaborate on this. Special teams player of the year. The guy squats 500 pounds. You see him doing backflips after every game. I mean, he just oozes athleticism. You watch the footage. He's very obviously a leader for this team and possibly the leader for the team. And talk about deep cuts defined. No offense. I know they were your biggest rival. But that's a pretty damn deep cut to be going to McKendree State for a pro team. You know, it feels like they have to take a boat. There's a guy with a torch that leads you there, you know, that type of stuff. But in all seriousness, Miami got athleticism and leadership across the board with a lot of these undrafted free agents.
Yeah, and to piggyback on that, something I do for draft day is the entire time of leading up to draft day, I aim to have a list of 350 prospects based on what I've heard, where they've been consensusly ranked on one sheet. The Dolphins got, after the draft, they got three players that were still on this list. Matt Cole was one of them. And another one was wide receiver Kirk Merritt out of Arkansas State. This is somebody who is 6 foot, 210 pounds. He started out at Oregon, transferred. He was dismissed from Texas A&M for, as it was described, indecent exposure. I don't know too many details about that, but he went to the Sun Belt Conference there with Arkansas State. He was the newcomer of the year, had over 1,000 yards in 2018. And then in 2019, he had 800 yards and also, like Matt Cole, 12 touchdowns. He's a good size at 6 foot, 210, stocky, can stack the cornerback. If there's a highlight reel of him on YouTube and on Twitter of him making a lot of plays in traffic, and that's what you can expect there. So, yeah, both of these guys, let's face it, they're undrafted wide receivers. They face an uphill battle to make the team. But, you know, we saw a lot make the roster here last year, too. But, Paul, as far as the other guy, defensive tackle Benito Jones, and you can talk about.
Well, hold before we move on to Benito, I just want to comment on Kirk. I mean, you watch footage of Merritt, and I know he makes a lot of catches in traffic, but you see, he's a player that just every time you see him, he explodes off the film. It's the moves he makes and the body control, the way he at times you see him get tripped up by a player, break the tackle, and while he's still stumbling, regaining his balance, he's still pulling away from the defense, which you don't see a lot of that. You see a lot of people get slowed down. Somehow he still manages to speed up as he's recovering his balance, and that's an impressive trait to me. and the catch radius that you see with him on film, it's amazing.
Yeah, he's a physically talented player. I mean, this is somebody I very easily thought could have been drafted in the later rounds. And I think maybe his lack of experience on special teams factors into why a player like this doesn't get drafted in the later rounds as well. So, yeah, and even if these guys don't make the roster, they could also find their way on the practice squad. As far as Benito Jones goes, this is somebody that I was really surprised wasn't drafted. I mean, I had him in our mock drafts in the 5th, 6th, 7th round. I always had the Dolphins taking some sort of backup nose tackle. Usually it was Bravarian Roy from Baylor who went in the 6th round, but I had Benito Jones on there a couple of times and then took him off. Paul, I remember specifically that you had Benito Jones in a couple of your mock drafts here too, and the Dolphins end up getting him. What did you like about him?
I mean, there was a ton to like about him. I mean, I you know me, I'm always a guy that falls more for late round D tackles than early round D tackles, unless somebody just dominates like a Javon Kinlaw. But you watch him at the point of attack and the guy was a plug. I mean, you don't see him get pushed back on very often, if at all. And I mean, he's a guy I was talking about even in our draft day hangouts, the videos, as the rounds wore on, as a guy that was still sitting out there available, as well as actually Bryce Sterk, I think I mentioned a few times and took a few times. So I was ecstatic seeing Miami get both of those guys. Although we'll talk about Sterk in a minute.
Yeah, and Benito is somebody that, you know, I, again, easily could have seen going as, if you were to ask me where is he going to go in the draft before it happened, I would have said 5th round. He becomes an undrafted free agent. Glad the Dolphins jumped all over him. Tony Pauline from the Pro Football Network, I was listening to his podcast after the draft. He was really surprised he wasn't drafted. Also said, too, that had Benito come out last year, he would have been possibly a second or third round pick. He is a 5-star defensive tackle out of high school, was the 25th overall high school prospect in 2016, and second behind only Jeffrey Simmons at the defensive tackle spot. He has a daughter, and his dad died just a few days before the start of his NCAA college season. He's short and stocky, but he can move for his size. So he's not just a run plugger. He can also move. The big question with him has always been consistency. So he looks good on one play, looks bad on another. And that was kind of the same thing from one year to another. And to a certain point, you've got to ask, why is a player like this so inconsistent from one year to another? But Mississippi, Miami Dolphins coaching, a little bit different. So we could see the light click on a little bit more quickly there for Benito Jones. But Paul, you also mentioned Bryce Sterk there from Montana State, 6'4", 262, 4'7", 240, 34.5-inch vert, long arms. Man, I mean, on paper, it's like, how the heck did this guy go undrafted?
Yeah, no, I took him in a few mock drafts to play D-end. And much to my surprise, the Dolphins, I guess, engaged with him a few weeks ago and started talking about if they were to draft him, if he'd be willing to make a switch to tight end, which tight end is a position that he hasn't played since high school. And this is a guy that really projected as a situational pass rusher at the next level. He had 15 sacks last year, 8.5 sacks the year before. Last year, he had 20 tackles for loss. Just explosive, busting into the backfield from off tackle. And surprisingly, you know, I saw him tweet out that, you know, he was going to the Dolphins as a tight end. And I looked at that and went, oh, that's just a sense of humor because he's supposedly a pretty big jokester. And sure enough, the Dolphins listed him as a tight end, which just, wow. Okay. Interesting. But you know what? He's excited about it from what I hear. And I'm really intrigued because he's got monstrous size. And if he can be that blocker for you, with the power that he's got, he could end up being a steal because he's completely a ridiculous athlete, and I like the eagerness that he's showing here.
Yeah, and when you're 6'4", 262, and you run a 4.7, I mean, in comparison, the first tight end that was taken was Cole Kmet. He was what, 6'5" 260, ran a 4.7. I mean, so again, not comparing them as players, but the measurables are not far off. And he's somebody too that you might be able to stash if he impresses on the bottom of your roster or have on the practice squad to continue to develop. Two offensive linemen that the Dolphins also nabbed. Offensive tackle Nick Kaltmeyer from Kansas State. He took over for Dalton Risner at K-State for this past year after Risner was drafted in the second round by the Broncos. Didn't work out well. I mean, 5'6", 440, 18 bench press reps, so not all that great there. Better run blocker than a pass protector. He transferred from Western Illinois in 2015 to Kansas State and was kind of a backup until this past year. Played okay. Overall, Dane Brugler had this to say, and by the way, I highly recommend Dane Brugler's guide from The Athletic as well. He said, overall, Kaltmeyer falls below the NFL standards as an athlete, but he shows the ability to win early and sustain with his tough-minded approach, which gives him a shot. So kind of that lunch pail type of right tackle. We'll see if there's room for him on the active roster. And also Danelle Stanley from South Carolina, 6'3", 324, kind of fits that same mold the Dolphins have been looking for with Shaq Calhoun and Solomon Kinley, that kind of barrel-chested offensive guard. CBS's Brett Tesler said that he's a versatile guard center who many teams were interested in, and he ended up picking the Dolphins. So he's also, again, kind of a theme, you know, the Dolphins were able to nab a few players here, five or six of them we've mentioned so far that were hot commodities here among other teams before they were signed.
Yeah, and when your head coach and your GM are the ones that are making the recruiting calls to these guys, it pays dividends. I mean, it really seems like Miami had their pick of the litter. I mean, you look at, and I'm going to go back to Sterk for a second, the fact that not only did Miami convince him to convert to tight end, they also told him if they were to sign him as an undrafted free agent to play tight end, they wouldn't pursue any other tight ends to join the roster. So that's how much they believe in this kid. So, and got them to believe, or him to believe in them. So, I mean, and each player, as I went through the list for the ones I wasn't as familiar with, they ooze leadership. Like Lima, the defensive tackle there, he did tend to get pushed around at times. But his coaching staff, according to Barry Jackson, basically came out and said that he was the leader in that locker room, the heart and soul of everything they did, and they wouldn't have gotten where they did without him. And the fact that whenever it was third or fourth and one, or a game is on the line situation, he came alive and lit things up. So I don't expect him to make the active roster, but he could be somebody that as his strength gets up there and he gets a little bit better at the point of attack, the leadership is something that makes him stick to see what he's got in him for coaches like Flores.
Yeah, it's getting a little more congested there at that defensive tackle spot. Ray Lima from Iowa State, you were talking about. Yeah, a good size, 6'3", 316, 3-year starter there at Iowa State. 5'2", 440, doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot. It kind of average numbers across the board, but if somebody that can step up with his experience and put that to use, maybe he can transition to the NFL game a little bit faster. So we started with the best. You know, we've got a few more guys here that, you know, really, Paul, I looked a little bit into, but, you know, I think they face kind of an uphill battle. Tyshawn Render from Middle Tennessee State, 6'4", 260, should be somebody who fights for a backup role behind Emmanuel Agba and Shaq Lawson at that spot. Kylan Johnson, linebacker from Pittsburgh, 6'1", 231, and ran that 4.7, 5.40 that I say is my cutoff there. But so he really needs to show the intelligence. But after transferring from Florida this past year at Pittsburgh, he had 7 sacks and 11 tackles for loss. So did put up good numbers. So we'll see if he's able to play a little bit faster than he times. And then today, at the time we're recording, guard John Hubbard out of Northwestern State, undersized for a tackle at 6'4", 292 pounds, needs to add some weight. He's going to move from tackle to guard most likely. So, yeah, that's going to do it. We don't have to go through 18 of these guys like we did last year, Paul.
Which is also one less than the number of draft picks I had in our final mock draft.
That's true.
Sorry, I couldn't resist that one. And before we sign off here, I not really on the undrafted free agent front, I just want to thank everybody for the feedback that we've been getting out on YouTube and our other outlets. It's been super awesome interacting with everybody throughout this whole draft process. I mean, what a fun off season it's been so far. I don't know. I'm pretty sure you agree with me there.
Oh yeah. It's been phenomenal. And, you know, this selfishly for us really after the football season ends, you know, we get right to work on free agents and the draft to fill that
after
time.
Ends.
Yeah. I mean, immediately. a lot of times
we're doing that in October, even in a good year.
That's right. But yeah, January through April, I mean, it really helps us, you know, watch film and prep these shows and provide this info. And we're big on, we want to provide this for you in half an hour. We don't want to talk about what we had for lunch, where we went bowling, all this other stuff that these other shows tend to talk about sometimes, not naming anybody in particular. But Paul, even before we sign off, I can't help but notice, I'm looking at the punters that are out there, and there were a couple of them that have not been signed yet. And the biggest one is Joe Charlton from South Carolina, who I thought might have been drafted. And so in my mind, I'm thinking, why hasn't this guy been signed yet? Maybe he's fielding offers from other teams. And then I start just catching myself and thinking, yeah, have I really gone so far? I'm convincing myself that punter Joe Charlton from South Carolina is just fighting these teams off with a stick and is saying, hey, I'm going to be like LeBron James and call a press conference to make my decision. I don't know. Maybe I've completely lost my mind on these punters.
The thing I'm waiting for now is when Miami finally brings in a punter to battle in camp, is you ordering that punter's jersey. That's going to be, because he's going to win the job and then break his leg in the shower or get caught with like freaking we'll just leave it at get caught with something.
Yeah,
it'd be the Madden and curse.
Hey, maybe it could be an appropriate risk for me to take, you know, as far as jerseys are concerned, where, hey, even if he falls down the steps, which he inevitably will, if I get his jersey after he signed, then, you know, it's only a punter. You know, it's not.
Falling down the steps is a best case scenario after you buy a jersey.
That's right. So I've promised you, I've promised my wife, I'm not going to buy any more. I'm afraid to even buy the retired players at this point. So that's going to do it for our
maybe
breakdown.
Just go back, find a player from the 60s who's passed away and buy their jersey.
They'll end up more dead.
Yeah, right? Somebody will dig them up and throw them. Like, this is devolved.
It has. But yeah, really thank you everybody for joining us along this ride here. And a cool thing is with extra first, second, and sixth round picks next year, we've got 10 already. So we're going to be able to do this again all next off season, but we have a whole season of football to play here in 2020 for the Miami Dolphins. We hope you're with us for that. I'm Brian Catt, NFL on Twitter, Paulus_Fanatic_Pick. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Spreaker, iTunes, YouTube, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. And if it's not on the right side and it's not on the left side, it is on the fin side. Solo D, take us home.
It ain't the left side or the right side, and it must be the fin side. It ain't the left side or the right side, and it must be the fifth. Listen, Dolphins fans across the land all tuning in to see what Brian Catt and Paul about to do again.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.